Should we treat fever in our septic patients?
We're reaching for antipyretics with routine.
Mortality went down as temperature went up.
This is a controversial topic.
Sometimes abnormal is okay.
For years, we've been taught to treat fever.
Is fever actually beneficial? Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine, joined as we have been in the last several podcasts by my other three co-hosts, Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, and Dr. John Greenwood. Gentlemen, how are you this podcast?
Doing great. Doing great. New Orleans is the home of Jazz Fest, and it's full blossom at this time of year.
I was just going to ask you about Jazz Fest. I know that it's getting started down there, Peter. Who are the headlining acts, I guess?
Headlining acts, Alabama Shakes this weekend, Tom Petty this weekend. It was pretty phenomenal. Some great, great music.
I had the opportunity to attend Jazz Fest many years ago, and one of the things I definitely remember was the outstanding food at Jazz Fest in addition to the music.
I mean, that's insane. Crawfish Monica, crawfish enchiladas, soft shell crab po' boys, cochon de lait po' boys. It's a good time to be eating here and listening to music.
Well, I'm sure the ED visits aren't as much as during Mardi Gras, huh?
No, not nearly. Not nearly.
Well, how are things on the West Coast, Rob?
Doing well. Not as exciting as it sounds like New Orleans is, but doing well. Dealing with protests and everything, and other than that, we're doing great.
And John, how about you?
Doing wonderful. Philadelphia just had the opportunity to host the NFL draft. So we had a massive influx of about, I believe, 300,000 people for this event over the past 4 days. And it went off without a hitch, fortunately. It seemed like people were having a lot of fun and had some great weather. So it was a nice weekend.
Sounds good. Well, let's get to our educational topic for this podcast, and we'll see how long we go, but probably going to be a relative short one in comparison to others we've done, because we're going to actually focus on one specific question, a question that's come up based upon some recent articles that were just published in Critical Care Medicine dealing with treating fever in septic patients. So the question we're going to try and tackle this podcast is simply, should we treat fever in our septic patients? Peter, is this common or not?
You know, this is something that sadly many practitioners do and make it a hallmark of their care. So more often than not, we're reaching for antipyretics to treat fever in those patients in our ED, whether they're septic patients or not even qualified for sepsis, we're reaching for antipyretics with routine.
Rob, to start to address this question, is fever actually beneficial?
Well, this is a controversial topic, surprisingly. You would think that for years we've been taught to treat fever. We've given acetaminophen and ibuprofen and other agents to treat fever without really any evidence to show that it improves mortality or improves any sort of outcomes. So it's a great topic. So is fever beneficial? Well, fever has a negative feedback loop on the release of pyrogenic cytokines, those interleukins and other agents that can have significant effects in patients who have sepsis. Fever also has been shown to improve immune cell function. It's been shown to inhibit pathogen growth and slow viral replication. And then there's also evidence to show that antibiotic activity can be improved in the presence of fever. So there are some pathophysiologic responses, pathophysiologic benefits from fever itself.
Well, if there are these benefits, John, why do we reflexively want to provide an antipyretic? Can fever actually be harmful, or what's our thoughts behind that?
It's another great question, Mike. And I think fever in itself appears to be beneficial up to a certain point. And remember, sepsis in itself is newly classified as a dysregulated host response to infection. So I think when fever becomes actually harmful is when it gets too high or causes other problems, downstream effects that actually harm the patient. So fever can increase your metabolic rate, your oxygen consumption. So when your consumption outstrips your actual supply, that can obviously be a problem. It can adversely affect cardiovascular performance. And there's a belief that fever places additional physiologic stress on critically ill patients. And so I think our intrinsic desire is to get that patient back to that euboxic state where everything is normal. But sometimes abnormal is okay. We just don't really know how much abnormal to tolerate.
Well, let's dive into the articles that we're going to talk about to serve as the main focus for answering this question. Rob, I'm going to turn to you first. Now, as Peter alluded in the intro, treating fever is very, very common in the emergency department, in the ICU. And really, when you look at studies that survey clinicians as to whether they provide antipyretic therapy, almost all of them do or report administering some type of antipyretic therapy, either most of the time or, in fact, all of the time to their febrile septic patients. And I think the study that I believe we touched on probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago, that got everyone talking about the use of antipyretics was the HEAT trial. Kind of remind us specifically what the HEAT trial was.
Yeah, this was a great trial. It was in New England Journal of Medicine in 2015, and it was an Australian and Kiwi study, New Zealand, 23 ICUs in those two nations. And their objective was to evaluate whether the administration of IV acetaminophen to treat fever would worsen outcomes. So it was a prospective, parallel, blinded, randomized control trial of adult patients, basically 16 years or older. You had to have a fever, temperature of greater than 38 or higher within 12 hours of enrollment, and you had to be receiving antimicrobial therapy for known or suspected infection. And so they randomized one-to-one patients to either acetaminophen IV, 1 gram every 6 hours, or placebo. And the study continued until 28 days after enrollment or discharge from the ICU or resolution of fever or cessation of antibiotics, death, or development of a contraindication to acetaminophen. And again, their primary outcome in this study was ICU-free days to 28 days, and basically a composite outcome of mortality and ICU length of stay. And their secondary outcomes were 28-day and 90-day mortality, as well as ICU and hospital length of stay. And their final secondary outcome was days free from mechanical ventilation or vasopressors, basically. And the results, they had 700 patients. And in their primary outcome, there was no difference in ICU-free days, no difference in that composite outcome of mortality and ICU length of stay. They wound up having 23 days on average in this acetaminophen group and 22 days in the placebo group. And with regard to the secondary outcomes, there was no difference in 28-day or 90-day mortality. There was no difference in ICU or hospital length of stay. And there was no difference in mechanical ventilation, inotropes, vasopressors. But there was, in a subgroup analysis, acetaminophen was associated with longer ICU and hospital length of stay in non-survivors. So the limitations of this study were that they used an IV formulation of acetaminophen, which is not really that commonly used in the U.S. A third of each patients in each group wound up receiving acetaminophen after the course of their study drug. And then there's some concerns about their choice of the composite outcome. Also, these findings are really only relevant to the early use of acetaminophen to treat fever in the ICU. And the bottom line, the take-home point from this study was that early use of acetaminophen to treat fever in ICU patients with suspected infection does not affect 28-day or 90-day mortality.
Great, great summary, Rob. Now, I remember this particular article study getting a lot of attention via social media, blog posts, podcasts, talking about the use, again, of acetaminophen in treating these patients. Now we've got several new studies, in fact, two or three from 2017 already in the first few months of the year. John, I'm going to turn to you. Rob just gave us a great summary of the HEAT trial. Let me have you review our next study specifically dealing with fever in the emergency department patient and some surprising results about its prediction on survival in those with severe sepsis and septic shock.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Rob did a great job laying out the landscape here. And just in this past month in April 2017, a study by Jonas Sundin Kullberg out of the Karolinska Institute in Sweden, published in Critical Care Medicine, the following study: fever in the emergency department predicts survival of patients with severe sepsis and septic shock admitted to the ICU. So their objective was essentially this. They wanted to assess the prognostic significance of body temperature measured in the ED, so early on, in patients with severe sepsis and septic shock, essentially within the first 24 hours of arrival to the ICU. This was a prospective multi-center cohort study, a compiled Swedish National Quality Sepsis Register of adult patients over 17 years old. They were admitted to multiple different types of ICUs, so over 30 ICUs in Sweden, and they all had a diagnosis of severe sepsis or septic shock. So what they found was, out of the little over 2,200 patients in their analysis, 750 of them were from university hospitals, and the remainder were from essentially community or county hospitals in Sweden. Their in-hospital mortality was a little under 25%, with a median length of stay of 13 days. So they stayed in the hospital for a little while, but not all that long, and had a reasonable mortality based on what we know the current mortality is of sepsis as we describe it today. The admission and temperature mortality associations were actually interesting. So 55% of the patients had a temperature less than 38 degrees, and 23% had a temperature less than 37 degrees. So 23% were actually hypothermic. On average, though, the crude in-hospital mortality decreased by more than 5% per increase in degrees Celsius from 35 degrees Celsius to 41 degrees Celsius. So mortality went down as temperature went up, which was pretty interesting. Length of stay of survivors fell with increasing temperature, and they measured quality of care measured by bundle compliance, which we know sometimes has some pitfalls, but quality of care seemed to improve markedly with rising temperatures. So patients with higher temperatures received more timely care, but it didn't necessarily affect the temperature mortality association. They did do a subgroup analysis where they found the relationship between body temperature and mortality remained unchanged by age, lactate level, type of infection, specifically by which type of bacterial infection the patient had, or by bundle achievement. And there was no difference in temperature mortality association between secondary and tertiary hospitals. So care was pretty much the same between all these different institutions. Now, certainly there were some limitations to this study. The temperature measured was during some variable circumstances and certainly could cause some measurement errors. Only 58% of the patients in the registry had a complete information on variables. And as we know, sometimes when all this data is being collected, some things get missed, measured exactly at the same time. They didn't include any severity of illness scores, so it's hard to tell whether certain patients were on more vasoactives than others, what their SOFA score was. That probably would have been helpful in making some other general assessments about the usefulness of temperature. But the last thing is, they didn't contain any information on use of antipyretics or other immune modulating drugs prior to body temperature measurement. But at the end of the day, I think the take-home point is that in this large multi-center study of patients with severe sepsis and septic shock, there was a strong inverse relationship between increased body temperature and mortality.
Great job, John. Now, that is particularly surprising. As temperature increased, the mortality actually decreased, probably counterintuitive to what many of us may think. And once again, our impetus to reach for that antipyretic when temperature goes up, but suggesting potentially those beneficial effects of fever in our septic patients. Now, Peter, I'm going to turn to you for our last study that was also just published in Critical Care Medicine, I think this month, in fact, by Drury, and that is a systematic review and meta-analysis on antipyretic therapy. Take us through this latest study.
Yes, as you mentioned, it is a review and a meta-analysis with the goal really of evaluating the effect of antipyretic therapy on mortality in critically ill septic patients. We understand that about half of septic patients wind up being febrile, somewhere about 40%, so about half of them are. So it was the typical systematic review and meta-analysis. They looked at really randomized and observational trials were the only studies included. The primary outcome that they looked at was a 28-day mortality. There was a series of secondary outcomes that they looked at as well. And those secondary outcomes include early mortality, so mortality prior to day 14, also the frequency of nosocomial infections, so the hospital-acquired infections, the frequency of shock reversal, and then also mean changes in heart rate and minute ventilation. So when we look and break it down to results, it looked like there were 16 trials that were included, 8 randomized control trials, and 8 observational trials. Of the randomized control trials, 4 studies, or a little bit just under 1,200 patients, reported 28-day mortality. We saw no difference in mortality, none. The other 4 studies, about 1,500 patients, reported hospital mortality. Again, no difference in mortality. Physical cooling and non-steroidals lowered the temperature more effectively than acetaminophen. And then heart rate and minute ventilation were not significantly different between the groups. Not different. So we also see that there was no difference in nosocomial infections or the reversal of shock states. There was no publication bias as well. So when we look at the observational trial, so off of the randomized control trials, 6 trials of high quality, 2 of lower quality. Those initial 6 studies looked at just over 2,000 patients. Their report of 28-day mortality, no difference in mortality. There was no specific antipyretic method was associated with mortality benefit, and there was no publication bias present in those studies. The limitation. Most of the studies in the meta-analysis were not designed primarily to evaluate effectiveness of fever treatment. The administration of antipyretics was not controlled in these studies. And then the studies also varied in terms of specific antipyretic used and that duration of therapy of the antipyretic. So let's look back at this again from a take-home point. Understanding, as I said before, about half of the septic patients are going to wind up being febrile. 80% of providers either treat fever all the time or most of the time. So the take-home point is, while antipyretics are associated with lowering body temperature, this therapy does not confer a 28-day hospital mortality benefit in septic patients. Shock reversal and acquisition of nosocomial infections were also unchanged. And so those are the take-home points. Pretty big deal, and I think it's a significant practice changer.
Definitely, you know, in terms of these 3 articles and a handful others that we haven't covered in the podcast, but so often I think every single one of our listeners out there knows that when they go into the next shift, whether it be in the ED, whether it be on the floor, whether it be in the ICU, and that infected or septic patient spikes a temp, our nursing colleagues come to us and say, patient X, elevated temp, what do you want to give them? And we think, tried and true, let's give them an antipyretic, make them feel better. But a lot of the recent literature is kind of challenging that. And Peter, you gave some great take-home points. Let me go to John, then Rob, then we'll end with you, Peter. But how do you take this back to the bedside? Certainly, we don't have a tremendous amount of RCTs. There are a few that are starting right now and enrolling patients. But in terms of your treatment of the individual patient, might you withhold antipyretic therapy for some? John, what say you?
Well, Mike, I think that these studies are very interesting. And again, I think this is a very personal or patient-specific question. What my take-home from this is fever's not bad unless it's causing a secondary problem. So for me, as we've moved away from defining sepsis by SIRS, which includes fever, to more of a end organ dysfunction categorization, if the fever is causing some degree of end organ dysfunction, so patient's hypotensive or altered with a fever, I think I still might treat that patient with an antipyretic. However, the patient's tolerating it fine, they're maintaining their hemodynamics and otherwise look well, and they have an infection with a fever, maybe that's not as big of a deal as we once thought. So for me, if it's potentially causing some additional end organ dysfunction, I'm still going to treat it, but the patient's tolerating fine, I may just leave it alone.
Rob, how about you?
Yeah, similar to what John said, I look at this very pragmatically. And of note, all of these studies, none of them showed harm from treating fever. While there was no benefit to treating fever, there was no evidence that treating fever, certainly at least in the New England Journal study, that and the meta-analysis, probably the most consequential of the studies, there's no harm from treating fever. So the way I look at it is, if I have a patient that's, say, that's intubated and is not going to be bothered by having a fever, you know, they're sedated and they're not going to complain that they have a headache or they, you know, they feel uncomfortable from the fever. In that patient, I may not be so aggressive about treating fever. I also would not be aggressive about treating fever in somebody who might have a consequence from administration of NSAIDs or Tylenol. For example, a patient who has liver failure, I certainly would not be too aggressive about treating fever in that patient. But the vast majority of our patients are awake and uncomfortable with fever. And in those patients who are having a patient experience of problem with fever, then I still would treat.
And Peter, bring us home.
So I got to really give a shout out to Rob on this because he brings up the C word very well here. And the issue being comfort. I know that in my practice for 30 years in the ICU, the nurses clamor for comfort. They're championing comfort for the patients. And I'm not talking about patient satisfaction and HCAHPS. I'm talking about they're really clamoring, saying, you know, the patient looks uncomfortable. I'd like to treat the fever. I would just say for about 20 of those 30 years, we really pushed not to do that unless the patient is specifically saying that they are uncomfortable. And this is the rationale that we use in our shop. All of these patients are started on antibiotics. And if you treat religiously with antipyretics, then the fever drops. I would like to know that the antibiotics are doing what they're supposed to do and causing a defervescence because they're actually treating the underlying infection and then having a response to the fever. And so I really am cautious, particularly after 12 to 24 hours, not to use antipyretics in patients receiving antibiotics so that I can follow their fever curve, because that helps me understand who's benefiting. The other piece that I would just caution our listeners to, if you're going to predict poor outcome, it's the patient who can't mount a fever and is actually the hypothermic patient actually tends to do less well than those patients who are mounting temperatures.
Outstanding pearl there, right there at the end, Peter. In terms of the hypothermic patient, we just had a case earlier this week of the exact same thing where a patient came in 33.5 degrees Celsius and really, really struggled in terms of his resuscitation. So can't overemphasize that enough. And gentlemen, this has been a really, really helpful discussion. We've probably gotten well over a dozen questions sent to us through the website, specifically asking about the treatment of fever in septic patients, because many of our listeners are up on the literature. They're following these articles as they come out. So it's been really, really helpful to kind of do a little bit of a deeper dive on these three articles that are, once again, potentially practice changing, and the fact that the use of antipyretic therapy really doesn't improve 28-day or hospital mortality. So with that, let's bring this podcast to a close. If you have any additional or further questions for us on this topic, please shoot us an email through the website. Once again, thanks to all of our new listeners out there. We've got several joining from the Society of Emergency Medicine Physician Assistants, so a great partnership with them. And want to thank all of you for your continued support. Please let us know if you have any additional topics that you'd like us to cover in the coming weeks on CCPEM. For now, we'll say so long, and we look forward to talking to you on our next podcast.